Someone told me during the break that they attended a seminar 2 years ago and started having a quiet time, and they've had a quiet time ever since. So I'd like to commend that person, and you can do the same thing. I would also like to put in a shameless plug by our sponsor, Daily Truth Base. Grab one of these cards. It's actually all over the material that you have. Just go sign up, and we'll send you an email every day. And you don't have to read the whole email, but it will get you through the scriptures in a year. And if you actually spend time, a little morning and a little night, you'll actually do the entire thing. So let's see what we've done so far. We answered the question why you're here, at least one perspective of it. I'm going to cover all that organizational stuff next hour. We looked a little bit about your purpose for living. We looked about how you set a focus on that purpose through having objectives in five areas of your life. And we drilled down on one of them, spiritual growth, having a quiet time, and we kind of showed you a little bit about how to plan to have that happen. A thing that people normally like a lot that I'm skipping is the story of Solomon, considered the world's wisest guy. And there are two passages of scripture that bring this to bear. They're in your outline. It says in the book of Deuteronomy, which is the book of the scriptures that were written just before the nation of Israel went into the promised land, it said, when you get a king, he should copy out this book so he doesn't do three things. So he doesn't get multiplied chariots, which were the basic force of power in those days, nor go back to Egypt and get another one, an imported model, that he doesn't multiply wives, and that he doesn't accumulate lots of gold because that would make them less dependent upon God. So that's Deuteronomy, I think it's chapter 17. So you go forward about 500-600 years in their history, or a little less than that, and you get 1 Kings chapter 10, and it describes the fall of Solomon. And it said Solomon had chariot cities, he had more chariots than any other king before him or after him, and he made the people go back to Egypt to get an imported model. So if Solomon was having his quiet time, which was a little more limited in that day because he didn't have the whole scriptures, he would have said, should I get this Egyptian model? And no, it says, don't go back to Egypt to get another chariot. So it would have answered it for him really well. Then he makes gold like so plentiful that people are walking on it. And then it says, you shall not multiply wives. And it says, lest they lift up his heart and turn him away from God. And you go to 1 Kings chapter 10, the world's wisest guy, divinely imbued by God with wisdom, winds up walking away from God because his wives turned his heart away. If he'd just been having a quiet time, he would have succeeded and, you know, gone down in history as a good guy rather than a schmuck. That's a biblical term for someone who is not doing too well. So, probably is a schmuck thing. So, I was thinking when I kind of first discovered that, wow, here's the world's wisest guy, and he blew it because he didn't spend time seeking God like God told him to. And I thought, well, what hope do I have of succeeding if I don't have a quiet time as well? So one of the reasons I have a quiet time is just to not screw up big time and do a little better. So we talked about how to plan, organize, supervise, and evaluate. I'm going to spend a lot more time in the second hour, not more time, I'm going to spend time in the second hour, how to supervise yourself, how to sell yourself, how to motivate yourself, and how to help you change. Remember, you overcome problems by knowing your objective, get a right methodology, and developing your motivation, and that's going to be involving reprogramming your robot. A lot of these you're going to say, I'm going to do this, and you do it. Done. The other one, you basically have to write out the goal, and it's done. But I want to get to the things where you actually try to do something, but you just keep failing. And I want to give you some tips for success on that. Before I do that, though, I need to kind of finish where my Prezi is going, because I can't skip too well around that. So, one of the things that keeps people from hitting their objectives, other stuff comes in and competes for it. So this thing's page 51, or about thereabouts. It's a decision maker, and it's going to teach you how to prioritize your life. But before it does that, it teaches you whether or not you should do something. So something comes into your life, and you think, should I do X or not? And one of the big things is it the will of God or not? Now, if something is that God wants you to do, it's really easy. He'll make it happen if you cooperate. But what he wants us to do is frequently at odds with what we want to do, so there's a little conflict, and we frequently don't wind up doing the will of God. And that's one of the ways of bringing him glory, as we talked about earlier. So I've made up a little acrostic so I can carry it around in my head. It's called the will of God. You should know this and be able to share it with others. It's got another one embedded in it called logic. And one of the easiest ways to look at it is, what does the word say? So, you know, I want to give to charity, good objective, and I'm going to rob a bank to do it. So is that wise? Well, we kind of know that wisdom is choosing the right objective as well as the right means of obtaining an objective. You know, giving to something that is a worthy cause is probably a good objective, but robbing a bank to do it might not be the wisest. Why not? Well, if you open your Bible and it says, thou shalt not steal, you know, it's probably going to say, I guess it's not God's will for me to rob a bank today. I'll check again tomorrow. In the Word of God, you've got commands like thou shalt not steal. Doesn't say anything about banks, so maybe I'm okay. You got principles. Oh, yeah, don't take the other guy's stuff. That would probably be bank robbing. And then you have examples. So a lot of people just jump right to the example. You need to understand the principle behind the example before you go into it. Getting input from others about decisions is a wise thing to do. So people who know you, get some input from people who disagree with you. Don't just find the other frogs in the pond saying, should we try to eat the flies and kiss the princess? Of course, that's what we do. We're frogs. But you know, you want to get some other input from those who know what's going on. And then my favorite is logic. This is part of loving God with all your mind. You know, mind is an important thing. Without it, we don't function. The Ten Commandments are cognitive. They appeal to your thinking. It's not like 10 suggestions if you feel like it. They're things that you actually have to do. So using logic and a simple pro-con list, you have two alternatives. You put two columns and plus, minus, and you take each of these items. And, okay, which one of these contributes to my life plan to glorify God and serve others? Oh, I don't have a life plan to glorify God and serve others. Okay, you got a month, do it. All right, so put that together, and then you can make these better decisions. Which ones help me obey the great omission? Oh, that's commission. This is Jesus' last words to the disciples. Go make disciples, teaching them to obey. So which one helps you do that? Which one helps me grow in grace? Now, most people are clueless to what grace is about. Grace is power. So when Paul, who had a pretty good relationship with God, said, God, get rid of this thorn in my flesh, and he asked him three times, God said, finally gave him an answer, said, nope, I'm not going to take it away. My grace is sufficient. So Paul went away and pouted. No, Paul went away saying, I will glory in my infirmity so that the power of God might rest upon me. So basically, going into some challenging situations is a good idea because it helps you more depend on God's strength. Also, grace is a reward, so which one's going to rack up the most rewards? It's probably one of the reasons you're here on earth. Whole thing about rewarding verses at the end of the book that I appended this year for your edification. Which one will help you increase your usefulness to the master? This is an intriguing one. You have two opportunities for a job. One keeps you locked in a closet, and one has you interacting with people. I had a 40th anniversary of my college buddies, and was actually our freshman year, formed a fraternity called Lambda Sigma Delta. Those of you who know Greek will appreciate that. And I ran into one of these guys, and he was an engineer. He got his MBA, then he went to management, and he said, I didn't like management, so I gave it up and went back to being an engineer. Now, there are some people who should be locked in a closet away from people. He's one of them. But for the most part, being a manager is good because it gives you people interaction skills, and that's really what life is largely about. So that's a good thing to have. Increasing Christ-likeness is another thing. Which one of these opportunities helps me become more like Christ? So if I do this, I'll die on the cross. You know, it's like people, when they think about Christ-like, they have no idea what his character is like because they only hear the story that they get at Easter or Christmas. So you basically need to know the scriptures so you know what are the characteristics that are worth developing and emulating. And I got a bunch of them in 12 anyway. Last but not least, leading to the Holy Spirit. It's not a feeling, it's a conviction. When Jesus was led by the Holy Spirit, he was into the wilderness to be tempted for the most part. And a lot of people basically say, whatever I want must be the will of God, and that's kind of foolish. So once you figure out that it's wise, it's the will of God, then comes the next piece, which you can do with anything, regardless of whether it's a spiritual thing or not. And this is one of the keys to getting more time in your life. It's called classify and prioritize. When you have these tasks, you put them together as, are they urgent or are they important? Important tasks are ones that contribute to your written goals, and urgent are ones that have some kind of deadline. So the stuff that's urgent and important is like your boss comes into you and says, if we don't get this done by Friday, neither of us have a job here Monday. It's kind of urgent and important, so that's like a class one. That's something you really want to work on. Stuff that's not that urgent, but it's important, is like developing a set of goals that you can live with, developing objectives that will last you the rest of your life. Reviewing usually is not an urgent task, but it's really important, so you know where you're going. And I don't want to spend too much time selling you on that. Non-important and urgent is your phone ringing because your buddy next door wants to talk to you about the game from the weekend. You know, it's like that you don't need to have that. Non-important and non-urgent, that's spam, junk mail. You know, so use your spam filter and ignore it. So once you have the four categorizations, you've got a bunch of stuff that's urgent and important. What do you do next? All right, you got to classify them, and you classify them on. Come back here, you. You classify them on four. I'm sorry, three item spectrums. One is A, B, and C. Okay, A, act and achieve this week. Act and achieve today. All right, so this is the stuff that your $25,000 index card would be at the top. This I need to get done before I go home. Set a deadline. Deadlines are actually your friends. When I was doing Daily Toothpaste, I got far more done than I would have had I done it when I wanted to. But because I had a deadline, like 10 o'clock at night is coming, I need to get this done, I got the stuff done. So deadlines kind of help you dig down and push that extra effort forward. And then when you finally finish doing it, you say, phew, glad I don't have to do that again. However, you realize, well, I got a lot done as a result of doing that. Maybe I should do it again tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So act and achieve. And you're going to visualize these actions. This is going to be the key to be motivating yourself. In a little bit, we'll see that. Then there's some things that you just have to begin. So I'm going to take a step before I go home to get this done. Okay, I'm not going to finish it. I'm just going to start. And this is key because it starts activating your subconscious. So you want to... then the C can be left undone. My favorite category. mañana. So that's an M, by the way. So look at them, ABC. It's that simple. Some questions to ask when you're comparing these two tasks. Would a stitch in time save 9? So something might not be that urgent, but if I let it go, it gets urgent. There's the person, I need something out of them. If I basically take care of it now, then I won't have to go dig them up later. Here's a person, they want something out of me. If I give it to them now, then I'll get some goodwill. It'll make my life easier when I have to ask them for something down the road. So, that's a good way to save time by getting it done before it becomes a problem. Balance. I have 5 areas for your life. If you're doing a lot of stuff in one area and new thing comes in, it's in an area that you're already putting a lot of stuff in, don't do it, because you have a life to live. You have other objectives and you want to pursue them. So don't take on new responsibilities. I'll teach you how to say no by the time you get out of here today. What are the consequences of doing it or not doing it? Just real simple logic. And what gives me the greatest benefit? What gives me the most damage? So minimize your damages, then go for the benefits. Is there a way you can get someone else to do it? So delegation is they have to understand that what they're supposed to do, they have to agree to it, there has to be a timetable that they agree to, and then you have to follow up. People don't do what you expect, they do what you inspect. Basic management principle. So that's the prioritization thing. I'd love to spend more time on it. Here's the Will of God funnel. It's in your book. How to simplify your life. So let's talk about stuff you can cut out of your life. Time management seminars would be key of those. Okay, 1 and 2 might take a little time, so do it during the Super Bowl commercials. No, basically do it during the play on the Super Bowl, because I know you watch the Super Bowl for the commercials. So do it during the play time when it's boring. And think about how much time you spend on stuff. Things that are one-offs, like once a year you do something, forget those. It's the stuff that you do consistently every day. Why do you do it? and that magnifies. So look at those little tasks. If you master these minutes, the hours and days takes care of themselves. So figure how much time you put into it. Number three, why are you doing it? How does it tie into your life purpose and plan? Is it worth the amount of time you're spending on it? Number five, will help the rubber meet the road. To what objective or goal is it related? You do all this stuff, where does it get you? Well, I've always done it. I mentioned a little bit at the beginning that there are two kinds of people, maybe not at the beginning of this seminar, tugboats and sailboats. Tugboats are those who, Myers-Briggs or SJs, you know who you are, you set an objective and you just tug, 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 tug. If the engine gives out, you paddle, 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 and you eventually hit your objective. The rest of us, I'm not one of those, are perceivers, according to Myers-Briggs. And it's like, well, you know, I want to see my options, and yeah, I know I should get that done, but, you know, I'm going to wait for a gust of wind. So you have your sails up at least so you can catch the gust of wind. Now, the neat thing is that sailboats can outperform tugboats if the wind's blowing correctly. So basically, if sailboats are looking for that gust of wind and paddling a little bit to move into the right perspective, when that gust of wind hits, they can blow the SJs out of the water. But the fact of the matter is the SJs usually win because they are consistent. And that's a good thing to keep our world going. So you can read through these questions on your own because I don't want to tell you stuff that you know how to read. Okay, personal growth objective, we kind of looked at that. Okay, here we have my, see if this goes any deeper. Nope, okay, this is the one I have to explain to you. Let's make them a little bigger. This is the other side of that super duper nifty diagram that is your life. It's in the front of the book. Thank you very much. Right under the blue cover next to it. On the left side is management by objectives applied to a life. Now, a lot of us have good goals. You know, we have things we want to do, but somehow we just don't get them done. And there's lots of reasons why those life is like that. Along the outside column here, I can do it here, this stuff here, various influences on your life. The Holy Spirit is working in a will and a good pleasure. Parents, TV, books, heroes, education, life experience, basic force of the world, peer group, and at the very bottom you've got something that should be like some teammates, accountability partners. Those are various influences. The things that are closest to our heart tends to be the stuff that was our basic experience that got redrawn wrong. So these are various influences acting upon us. Here we are, right here. Here's our head. In our head, we have needs, interests, desires, abilities, the way we think about ourselves, which actually becomes a robot. And what you want to do when you start putting together your objectives is you look at how you're uniquely made, what your, quote, gifts and abilities are, and figure out how can I, you know, uniquely contribute to the tasks at hand. So that's kind of where that stuff comes into. Once you figure out that you have a objective that you want to hit, what goes on in your head is key. Last week in the outline the sermon, I talked about how the SEALs, basically their self-talk, what they said, how they thought, determined whether or not they succeeded in probably the most rigorous training on earth. So there are a couple things that are going on here. Affirmations is one of them. If I asked Cody if you could jump up and hit the ceiling, Cody would look and say, in his mind, he'd have a picture of himself jumping and not hitting the ceiling and embarrassing himself, and he'd say, nah, I don't think so. It's consistent with his self-image. You know, Bob would stand on the chair and be able to maybe possibly get it because he's, you know, got those muscles and all that. But anyway, he's used to jumping over a fence when people are chasing him. Okay, so you have this self-image of what you do or don't do, and that so many of us are limited by what we think we can accomplish. And one of the things I mentioned last week is the general testimony of people who've been through the SEALs training, you can accomplish 20 times more than you think you can. The limiting factor is your brain, which is based on your experiences, your values for comfort, and all that other stuff. It's messed up. So you have a task, you look at it, you say, I can do this. Remember, that's one of the things that's actually realistic. You can do it. So you prayerfully considered your task. You say, I can do it. You internalize, I'm going to do it. And then you actually start doing it. So this is where you make your decision, your heart, and you say, I'm going to do it. But before it actually happens, it goes a little offline to these two guys. Dennis Waitley is one of my favorite psychologists. He He was a consulting psychologist for the NASA space shots. He also debriefed POWs on the way back from war. So he looked at people who had everything and people who had nothing, put together some really good books that I read in the early 80s called The Psychology of Winning, The Seeds of Greatness. This is his more modern one. And it's good research-based stuff, rooted in real life. He happens to be a Christian, although it isn't as well reflected in his work, but he's got some really great insights. The major insight I got out of him is we have a conscious and a subconscious level of thinking. The conscious level of thinking controls 10% of our thoughts. The subconscious controls 90%. And someone asked me why they did something that was inconsistent with what they thought. They were supposed to go get something. They knew it was over there, but they went somewhere else to get it. They said, was that irrational? I said, no, it's human. And the reason that's human is we operate on automatic pilot most of the time, 90%. So when you basically got up to brush your teeth this morning, did you ever think, okay, I got to start in the upper left, back, forth, okay, now I'm going to go to the next tooth. No, you kind of went in there and you just automatically did it. When you met someone, alien life form sticking hand out, what should I do? Oh, social norm, I should grasp it, shake it up and down and say, pleased to meet you. You know, that's like automatic. You didn't have to consciously think of that. Although when you were little, you were probably trained to make that happen. When you go to cross the street and you say, do not walk, that's when you start running. It's like automatic pilot kicks in. It's the way we function. Because if we always had to consciously think of each thing, we'd use up all that glucose and we'd have to consume a whole lot more donuts. Okay, so the trick is you're going to be excited about achieving some of your goals. Your robot has not been in a goal-achieving mode. So you have to consciously kick your judge into gear and have the judge say, okay, robot, we need to be reprogrammed. And the way you do that, I should have something in here called visualization. Yeah, there it is, right there. You visualize yourself doing it. You visualize yourself achieving the task as well as overcoming the obstacles to the task. I talked about this last week in a sermon that study was done down at NYU. When people just thought about achieving their task, that wasn't sufficient motivation to get them to do it. When they just thought about overcoming the obstacles, they basically got depressed because it's too much. But when they combined two and they dwelt on, this is what I want to do and this is what I have to do it, it makes it happen. In grad school, I had to write a thesis at one point, and it was do or die, and I got my first one rejected, so I need to get my second one done or they wouldn't graduate. So I would visualize myself, going home, walking upstairs, going to the alcove where my desk was, turning on the computer, and starting to work. And then eventually the task got me into it. So I would just program myself to make the thing happen. Then I discovered this from Dennis Whateley, that he was sitting on a plane next to a guy and he starts making this high-pitched sound. And he said, can I help you? Should I call the stewardess? What do you want? And the guy looked at him indignantly and said, I am an oboist for Cincinnati Orchestra and I have a rehearsal recital tonight and I am rehearsing. And he was playing the thing in his mind before he did it. So just last night, Misty sent me this super little 3-minute YouTube, yeah, wherever Misty is, she's somewhere around here. Thanks. And it gives a couple really good examples of this. They had broke up people into groups. People played the piano, and people thought about playing the piano. And after 3 days, the skill levels had increased equally. After the fourth day, the ones who actually physically did it got a little better, but then the ones who had just thought about it and imagine themselves playing the piano, caught up. But here's the thing that blew my mind away. Actually, I'm going to do a marathon as a result of this. They actually had people imagine themselves doing gross motor exercise. Just imagine. All right. Just imagine yourself doing that. All right. Now, the people who actually did the exercise, their muscles increased 42%. The people who just thought about doing it, their muscles increased 22%. So I figured out if I just think about running a marathon, I can get 7 miles in. I mean, this is awesome. But your mind makes the connections. You basically rehearse. This is the essence of spiritual kung fu. When we do the sanctification, ain't going to rain no more peace. That's really what you have to do. You have to imagine yourself taking the action before you take it. Martial artists, athletes, musicians, all people that basically succeed, always think about the action before they do it. This ties in with the thing I said at the beginning of the seminar. Why do we do what we do? Because we want to. Why do we want to do it? Because we perceive that getting it is more beneficial to us than not. I came across this years ago, even before I read Dennis Whately, studying the book of James, and it talked about sin. It said, you dwell on it, you embrace it, you're dead. All right? So then I somehow had the insight that, gee, I wonder if you flip that around, you could do righteousness. I dwell on the activity, I embrace it, I get life. And that's the essence of some of the stuff I've done on sanctification, and it really works. So you got to program your robot. If you are programming your robot and keeping it in the forefront of your thinking, your robot will eventually take over and say, get out of the way, I'm going to go do this. And then you'll make the thing happen. So you want to basically have your robot go to work for you. Getting back to the $25,000 index card, I'm actually starting to pick up the pace, so hopefully you can listen faster. But if you do that the night before, your subconscious level of thinking will be solving your problems for you while you sleep, and you'll wake up the next morning with thoughts that will solve your problems. So Andrew Carnegie was told to do it in the morning. As soon as the item comes in, pop it on your card. I need to do this tomorrow. Before you go home at work, at the end of the day, program what into your subconscious what you're going to need to do the next day. And then when you're sleeping, you can be working. Now, if this gets to the point where you are staying up awake at night thinking about it, then back off a little bit. But by and large, planning what you're going to do ahead of time makes it so much easier to actually perform. Remember, you do what you want to do, and you want to do it because you think it's beneficial. And as a result, you've been focusing on it. You do what you focus on. So that guy I mentioned in the little cove in the Bahamian Cay, he is just basically was doing what he wanted to. He just focused on, I wanted to relax. That's great. It's okay for a vacation, not for a life. The other guys who are out kayaking in the ocean had a bigger objective. Okay, so you visualize, you affirm that you can do it, and I'm going to have this whole section of affirmations, and then eventually you take action, you sweat. Anything worthwhile is going to take effort. You have some other people to sweat with you, and then lo and behold, you actually achieve something. If you have some other people pushing you, and you reach it. Okay, questions on this? Yes?
Self-talk is a
I beg your pardon?
Self-talk.
Self-talk. Hi, self. Right. Okay. Self-talk is, I had a counseling course with Minerva Meyer, being other these psychs, shrinks, psychiatrists. Yeah, that's what they were. And what they would do with their clients is they would give them a notebook, and they would have them write down in their notebook what they were thinking when they were exhibiting the problem. So one guy had a huge problem with anger. So they give him the notebook, whatever you're feeling here, I want you to write down what you're thinking. So he's there on a grocery line. He's getting angry because the person in front of me has too many things. He writes it down. Your cashier's an idiot, blah, blah, blah. I'm more important than this, I don't have to wait, blah, blah, blah. So he'd write down what he was actually telling himself. A lot of your self-talk comes from your parents. I'm going to talk a little bit about how to reparent yourself because it's so crucial for so many people. And then he would bring the notebook back to the counselor, and the counselor would go through it, and they would examine whether these are truth or lies. And they basically would unmask the lies, give him the new truth, and they would actually start changing him with the behavior modification, some sort of cognitive therapy kind of thing. So that's kind of the self-talk. I'm going to have a page on affirmations that will help you with your self-talk, and let's see if we can find that. Ah, look at that. All right, here's some affirmations. I took the areas that people usually have problem with, and I gave you some scripture reference to go find the answers. It's probably sermons on each of these on truthbase.net if you want it, but what's my identity? What's my purpose? What's my goals? Here's a good one on goals. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Don't rely in all your ways. Acknowledge Him. He'll direct your paths. Use of time. I'm going to do what's wise. So you write an affirmation. Let's just pick the use of time because we already did wisdom. Or work. Let's do work because you'll kind of do that. Affirmation is, I want to creatively and thoroughly meet my client's expectations or my boss's needs or my co-worker's needs or my team's goals, something like that. You put that in and you affirm that that is you, the new you. The old you was, I want to basically get as much glory for as little work as possible. The new you says, I want to serve because I'm doing my work heartily for God. So you come up with an affirmation. Under priorities, I want to seek God's kingdom first by having a quiet time. You put that thought in. Okay? So it sounds a little new agey, but it's as old as the book. It's how you talk to yourself. And it, there's a section I do on lies you believe, and they kind of came out of the bad side of these. These are the good side of these. So that's the self-talk affirmation thing. This is a spot to put them. This is the most valuable page for those of you who are Christians who want to be a little more serious about your relationship with God. It's how to reckon yourself dead to sin and alive for God. And the key thing in there is visualizing the consequences, visualizing the new actions. I have sermons on it, so you can find them yourself. The lies we believe, some spiritual warfare stuff for you guys who need help. And then we have personal growth stuff. So how do you sharpen the saw? Eastern European chainsaw joke insert here. Okay, so now we do your top 10 time wasters and savers. Now, hopefully they're on facing pages in your book. 96 and 97. Okay, those face each other? Is that good? I hope they face each other. All right, super. So what these things do is they... The saver is the corrective to the waster. All right, so they were basically were independent list of stuff I had gathered, and then I kind of massaged them a little bit so they fit, so you can actually have solutions to the problems without having to do a project planner. A lot of us are tyrannized by the urgent. We're reactive firemen rather than aligning tasks with our purpose. So this is something I was asked at the beginning. How do you not get tyrannized by the urgent? The solution is planning. What's going to come up? Where's the danger? Where the fire is going to start? And then prevent them from happening so then not everything is a crisis. That's a key. Most people are much more productive if they are not interrupted at work. So getting time where you are undistracted. So basically, there's a group of a number of studies have been done where this, where coworkers agreed to take each other's calls for 1 hour a day. So one of them had one bad hour a day, and the other four in the group had four undisturbed hours a day. And then they were able to get their stuff done, and then they went back and made the calls, boom, 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 boom. Grouping together tasks that are similar is an effective means of managing your time. So to prevent yourself from being a reactive fireman, don't let the fuel accumulate to get set on fire. And you do that by planning on the other side. Purposeless tasks. Most of you are, how many people are not familiar with 80-20? Okay, 80-20. Italian economist George Prato came up with this. He noticed that 80% of Italy's wealth was produced by 20% of the companies. When my wife Jill used to work for IBM, she noticed that 80% of revenue came from 20% of her clients. 80% of her problems came from 20% of her clients, and unfortunately they weren't the ones that were giving her the revenue, so that's why they had to pay her. So there's this 80-20 principle. The way it boils down to for you is if you have a list of 10 things you want to get done, two of them will give you your greatest benefit. I tell my students, you know, if you want a B, great. You know, this is what you have to do to get a B. The A is going to take extra work. So I knew when I was in school, you know, I could get a B with too much problem, but it took a lot of extra work. I actually spell things correctly. Can you believe that? To get into the A range. And sometimes it just wasn't worth it. I remember when I was taking Hebrew, I said, there's no way I have time to memorize this stuff. I can look it up in a book. I don't need to memorize it. I'm just going to settle for a B. And, you know, I did 20% of the work. I got a B. Actually, by the end of my Hebrew thing, I got actually an A minus. So anyway, 80-20 is a great thing. Things do not have to be done to perfection. I'm going to talk about this the next 2 weeks when I talk about perfectionism and overcoming it. It's, you know, the phrase good enough for government work, that's not really the phrase you want to have. It's good enough for the objective. Your worth and value doesn't come from getting everything done to perfection. Your worth and value comes from doing the stuff that is most important to your life plan and glorifying God.
Can I get a note on that? Sometimes I also think it's not just perfectionism, but it's like you have not looked at the task and assessed what 80% looks like. So it can also be a matter of, like, if you plan ahead, you'll be aware of how much time to get that.
Oh, very good point, Shannon. Yeah, pre-planning, thinking about what does this task require? Actually, I should have covered that under the project planner. You estimate how much time is it going to take, and then you make it fit that time. I had a friend who got a classics degree from Cornell. He went to Harvard Law School and was an investment banker. And we're there, we're away somewhere for a weekend, and he's sitting there reading a book with a stopwatch in his hand. So it's a guy who knows how to read. You know, classics majors read everything. And I said, what you doing? And he said, oh, I'm trying to read faster, so I'm only giving myself 30 seconds a page. That was the time he gave himself, and then 30 seconds, he turned. And it was both pages. Yeah. So by just pushing yourself. I talked a little bit about people who do memory games, competitions, and they plateau, and then they have to go up to the next level. In order to do that, they have to be willing to make mistakes, and then they get the next level of performance, time-wise, and then the eventual robot kicks in, and they start getting it, accuracy-wise. Disorganization, no written plan, telephone tag, inability to say no. I guess I'll do that here. I've got a section on it, but I'm not going to find it later, so moving fast. So if someone calls you up, ring, ring, zing, zing, whatever the things make these days. That's the way you hold it, I forget. Used to be this, but in the old days. Someone says, hi, Bill, you want to be president of or chairman of our Styrofoam Cup Committee? All right, now there's a way to get out of these kinds of things, all right? It's written down, it might even be under this thing, but the first thing you have to do is listen to them. All right, then you reflect back to them. I understand you're asking me to be chairman of your Styrofoam Cup Committee, because if you don't reflect back and you say no, they'll think that you didn't hear them, because obviously everybody wants to be chairman of the Styrofoam Cup Committee. So you then say, you listen, you reflect, then you respond, no! You don't actually do it like that, but you have the ability to say no, don't you?
No.
Good, all right. Some people still awake here. All right, so you basically say no, then you give a reason. Oh, that's the time I normally relace my sneakers. No, the reason you give them is I've got other tasks that are much more important than your crummy requests. No, that's not the way to say it either. You basically give them some reason that you have to do something else that would preclude you doing that. You don't have to get that specific because people aren't that pushy. And then the golden element for this is you give them a sacrificial lamb. Have you tried Vince? Vince loves Styrofoam cups. I'm sure he'd be interested in helping you out.
4 years. I resigned a long time ago.
You know, basically, so I have other objectives in taking care of Styrofoam cups, and this isn't one of them. But that's kind of the way you do it. You listen, you reflect, you respond, you give a reason, and then you offer up your sacrificial lamb, and you get rid of a lot of stuff that way. You know, there's a phrase that you might have, I'm sure you've heard, a coward dies a thousand deaths, a brave man but one. You know, you just go in saying no is not that painful, rather than have to follow through on a thing you hate doing and eventually you're going to have to say no to again because it's just not fitting with your life. So it's a lot easier for you and the person to say no up front if it doesn't fit in.
Hey, Bill.
Yes?
I always feel bad, and I agree with all those steps, but I always feel bad about that last one. I don't feel like it's really a worthwhile. And some things are just not worthwhile for you personally, but if it's really not worthwhile, then you're kind of sticking it to somebody else.
Well, there might be some people who actually want the experience. The task might not be good, but getting the experience. You know, and you're just giving a suggestion. Gee, I know they're pretty busy, but you might want to try it. You know, offering up the sacrificial lamb. Misan's number is. There might be someone who does it. The other way to get out of that is to say, if you really can't think of anyone to help them out, say, I really can't think of anyone, but if I do, I'll let you know. All right, so if you can offer up a real sacrificial lamb, great. Otherwise, offer to help them solve their problem, but it's not going to—you don't want it to become your next problem. So saying no is a great test. I mean, a time management skill. Dull sod is low energy. You need to fix that. There's lots of ways to do that. Plan maintenance. Repeating mistakes. I remember. Yeah, we had the same problem last time. You know, one of my favorite lines when I'm driving the kids is, oh yeah, I've been lost here once before. You know, if you've made a mistake, figure out why you made the mistake so you don't have to repeat it. The unexamined life repeats itself. It's like the only thing we learn from history is we don't learn anything from history because those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. What else do we have? Indecision, failure to commit to a plan and follow priorities. Yeah, so you want to fix that by the end of February. Make sure you have a set of goals in place that will make it happen. It's under How to Eat an Elephant, a Bite at a Time. Interdependence versus solo effort. There's people that work a whole lot better working with others, so get others involved. Doing it yourself usually is not the wisest thing. There's some things you do yourself, and depending on the task, you do try to do with others. And then we have procrastination. I normally wait until later to do this, but I'm going to get it over with now. Here's how you overcome procrastination. You take your right hand, put it underneath your right thigh. This is tough on a chair. Your left hand, you put under your left thigh, and you sit there. And you look at your to-do list, and you look at your A1 priorities. You look at the ones that are most important, that are urgent, that contribute to your goals and objectives, and then you think about yourself. Wow, I got all this stuff to do. It brings glory to God. It's beneficial for me. It helps others. Brings me all the stuff I want. And what am I doing? I'm sitting here on my hands. Then the key is to not remove your hands until you decide to do the task. Because what do we do instead? Oh, we do this. Oh, after I get this done, then I'll do it. We never get to it. Then we get into escapism. Then we find our free cell games and all that other stuff. It's like if you refuse to do anything except your top task, you will eventually find yourself doing your top task because you visualize yourself doing your top task. It's pretty simple. Although I battle with it all the time because my robot, I was a world-class procrastinator. I spent 10,000 hours procrastinating. I am good at it. But so that is procrastination. That helps you overcome it. Exception to this one is if there's a better time to do the task than right now. So when you're planning out when you're going to do your tasks, you want to think, when's the best time? So I've got to call this person. Oh, they don't get up until 10. So I can't do that first and sit around for 2 hours waiting for him to wake up. So put it on your calendar. I'm going to call him at this time. When it comes to that time, do it. The ability to see a task and do it is crucial to success, and so few people do it. If you can just get your robot to say, task, do, you can chop out the stuff, get it done fast, and then you get to do the stuff that you enjoy more. Rather than, when I did Daily Toothpaste, I did it about 12 hours a day, and I'm ashamed to admit that. I spent about 4 hours a day dreading doing it. And I said to myself in those last 4 hours, I could have been asleep now if I had gotten myself in gear earlier. But, we're imperfect. Okay, so time savers, you got them. Help for the chronically late. Basically, chronically late people are selfish, describe it. This is help for them. Don't be late. You cause everybody else to wait for you. You miss stuff. The reason that most people are late are given there, and if the shoe fits, wear it. Same with the sluggard. Little laziness leads to a large loss. Basic theme out of that section of Proverbs. You can study that on your own. Personal leadership development traits. I teach a course on leadership, or used to, and this is some of my notes from my class notes. I kind of gathered different approaches to leadership. They're there for your perusal. I went to all different folks, like basketball coaches, educators, the Marines, all kinds of management stuff. My favorite guy on this is John Maxwell. I think he's on the bottom of this. He is a guy who has done things from nonprofits to businesses to sports. So he brings a lot of different things. There it is. He's at the bottom there. He's got a great little book here on, they're small books. I really mean little. They're indispensable qualities of a leader. What I would encourage you to do is flip through the stuff, pick out the top 10 traits you want to improve on. There's actually a little test beforehand. And then do a project planner on how to get this into my life. I have sermons on at least half of these. You can find them on toothpaste.net. If you draw a blank as to how you can go and do it, like how you can go and develop charisma, there are ways to do that. I can help you. Just drop me an email and I will eventually get back to you when it fits into my goals. Okay. Perfectionism and that, I'm going to do that in the next couple weeks. So if you want to hang out, Big Apple Chapel. Myers-Briggs, we talked about this, is great stuff. If you're a parent and you don't know this, you're dead. If you're married and you don't know this, you're dead. All right? If you're a manager and you don't know this, you're not going to be that effective. But it's really important to understand that people are made differently. I am a huge skeptic. I kind of steered away from this stuff for so many years because I thought so much of what I read was bogus. I accidentally came across this and realized, there's something to it. I know when Steve was at McKinsey, they used it a lot, and it's been really, really helpful in understanding why my kids are different than I am. All right. Ministry objective, you basically, loving others is to do what's best for them. To hear the words, well done, good and faithful servant, is the better objective. We don't have time to go through it in much depth. The basic paradigm is you learn the truth, you live the truth. Okay? You own it. Then you can love others with it. It's that simple. Find out what the right way to do something is, do it, and then pass it on to someone else. That's like not that hard. I designed a number of things. You can find seven passages. There's just like own seven passages of scripture. They're in under LA Toothpaste. Understand them, learn them, and pass them on to others. Survey of discipleship, what that's all about. You can read it on your own. Seven key passages, that's all stuff on your own. Let's see what we got here. The commercial training objectives, I mentioned some of that earlier. Okay, here's something, I'll probably do something about this later in the spring, maybe early summer. God meeting emotional needs, it defines what an emotional need is. It talks about security and significance, it shows how God met them for David. It's a really useful thing. People, you know, without even the sermon, just go through the verses and the stuff that's written, and you'll realize, wow, if God can meet emotional needs, he can meet all those other needs as well. Under ministry, this like you're supposed to do it. It's a team sport. So, what a biblical church is useful. The team competencies. What real ministry is. Okay, now I need to show you one more thing. And I haven't sold this much lately. Oh, how do you know an elephant comes at the very end? But this is the organizer. So. I have sheets up here. You can take them. I'm not going to waste the time passing them out. So, how many use some sort of organized system like a day runner, a day timer, Cambridge five-star diary? Okay, you'll all use something like that. So, you don't. All right, well, you should. You have...
Yeah, in school all day, so
yeah. You have in front of you... some really good stuff, and I dropped it off the past couple of years because everybody's got their own PDA and all their stuff. But then I realized those PDAs aren't helping you achieve your goals; they're helping you do tasks. So a number of years ago, I went through everything that's out there. You know, the obsessive compulsive that I was, am, is, are, and I kind of put them together and reconciled all the differences. And it's a system. And then I wrote instructions to it. And this past year, I was rereading the instructions. And I said, this stuff is awesome. I was benefiting from it. And I think you would too if you would go through it. So there are instructions. I'm not going to take all. I'm going to take the time to read through them all. I'm going to describe a few of the pieces, hopefully whet your appetite. You can go on to truthbase.net. I give you the reference. Download the sheets. Print them off yourself. It's like free. But you know, what's 1 cent per page. So... The only thing I didn't give you was a quarterly calendar. That's the piece that's missing. So a quarterly calendar that's on your phone, that's what you want. The monthly calendar is there, but you're missing stuff. So this incorporates all the principles of time management that have been written since the beginning of time. Well, almost. It's got the principles that are in a seminar are reflected in this, and it helps you actually put it into practice. And I used to actually print these up for people, and then the electronic age came upon us, and I stopped. It's a monthly sheet, and it's got some things you want to do this month. It's broken up into the quadrants, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4. It only really lists the 1 and 2 for the month. So, you know, what could you use this month for? Come think about this next month, February. You could actually develop a set of goals. Pop that on. The key is to be able to see in front of you every day, I need to get a set of goals developed. What's going to happen is you're going to take the book and you're going to throw it under your table to hold up the leg that's a little wobbly, and you'll never use it again. Until, you know. So you want to be able to keep this in front of you. This keeps in front of you what's important. So, oops, it's how'd I do that? So a journal thing. So this gives you a spot for the task. On the right, those numbers, they're time trackers. And one of the things you do when you set a goal, you put down how much time you actually put in towards that goal. So I have this goal of wanting to do X, and this past month, I didn't do anything towards X. Gee, I wonder why I didn't get X. No, it's because you didn't put any time into it. Now, if you put 10 hours in towards X and X didn't happen, then you need to learn to work smarter rather than harder, and you do a project planner to figure out, why didn't I get X? So the goal autopsy would tell you about this, the goal galvanizer would tell you about this, the instructions tell you about this. So I would encourage you to try this for a month. Then, what I gave you down below are some tasks you should do every month. There's stuff you should review, there's stuff to update, there's stuff to plan. And look at the stuff. Your life goals. What steps are you going to take towards your life goal this month? Each one of these things is described in the text of the book that you have. On the inside of the sheet, you can make out your own monthly calendar. If you notice down the left side, you've got your, steps you're going to take towards your big objectives. Right? This keeps it in front of you. Write down a step, take it. But here's something that's a little unique. Up at the top in green, Truth to Transform. Join the Fruit of the Month Club. Instead of oranges, get love. Instead of apples, get peace. Get joy instead of grapes. Actually, they don't send out grapes because they don't last. Anyway, so you put the truth there, and then every time you look at what you have to do that month, there's the thing that's supposed to transform you. It could be an affirmation. Though if you have other people seeing this, you don't want to write it, so you look like you're some New Age chanter. But there's you pop that together. So the key is every time you look at it, the things that you want are reinforced. And this is how you reprogram your robot. Your robot wanted to go this way. Every time you look at what you have to do, it says, robot, we're back on this track. So it's designed to do that. Eventually it should become automatic and you might not need it. But if you're not hitting the goals that you want, then this is a good way to do it. There's a weekly sheet. It's the same idea. It's broken into quadrants, give and get. I got to get through this by the end of the week, blah, blah, blah. Put in urgent and important in one, unurgent and important in number two. Skip the others. And then you've got some tasks to do for the week. You review, you prepare, you plan. Sunday night is a great time to plan your upcoming week. So then you hit the ground running Monday morning. If you're busy Sunday night, do it Sunday morning. Do it some other time during the week, and you can plan out what you're going to do. On the inside of it, you have sheets for the day. Look at that. It's got a little spot where you can put your quiet time thought. This is a way to keep you honest about having a quiet time. Spend 1 minute to get one thought, put it down, so you're not a spiritual schmuck. Okay? So just, this will show you you got it. And then as you look at it during the day, it's amazing how many times people say, I had a quiet time, but I can't remember what it was. Well, this will help you be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Every time you look at it, there it is. Then it's got the stuff that you want to have done, and then your actual log of what you did. But the keys are these little guys here. Unfortunately, the little bomb rolled out of place when the thing got printed, so he really belongs in that line. That's basically, can you kill two birds with one stone? Are you looking out for anything that could blow up? Kind of thing. The scissors, cutting things out of your life. Each of these is described in the toil book. I would encourage you to try it. Then you compare, this is your plan up here, this area. And then down below is your actual. And just slog things down in code. Not obsessively, not a long thing. Just to see, where is your time going? There's an electronic app for that. My son, junior in college, he's an RA this year, and he's got lots of stuff. And he tends to be a perceiver. So he really wanted to keep his time managed well. So he said there's an app that tracks what all your programs are and how much time you spend in each program. So he knows how much time he spent on Facebook, how much time he spent on Twitter, how much time he spent on this Word document for this project. And as a result, he said, I've basically cut out most of my Facebook. I'm getting all my assignments done. He made it to Dean's List, so he's doing well. And naturally, that is not his style. And he doesn't have the same memory as some of his other sibling members, so he has to work, and he's used that kind of project to make it work. So keep track of your time, figure out where it's going, and then you can use it. I have these sheets for you. Oh, yeah. Oh, very. How did I forget this one? The end of the day, plan the next day. Now, some of you live by the thrill of the check. You just, it's like, check, check. Your SJs are like that. Oh, yeah, another check. I got it. Yeah. All right. So, put the things down, check them off, feel good about yourself, and accomplish your goals. Last questions? Yeah?
So, we've got a lot of materials today, so one thing that you suggest,
All right, I would suggest you go to How to Eat an Elephant, one bite at a time, which is the next page on your thing, and start chomping. It tells you the next thing to do. 150? Yeah. So it lays out the steps. I could find them in the thing, but it'd take me too long. So that will tell you how to actually integrate these tasks. You know, plan out your month. So you got how much? Where are we? 20th. You got 10 days to kind of ease into this. Make February a really good, purposefully lived month. If there was one thing I'd suggest you do, it's sign up for Daily Truth Base. It's free. There's over 100,000 page views on this, so it's actually gaining some popularity. I get emails where people have liked it. The last group that liked it, I thought Shannon and Britt were joking with me, was it Hot Women International? Like Daily Truth Base. Yeah, it's like... it's like...
What is their mission?
I don't think we're gonna have a mixer with that church
anymore. I'm not even sure what country they're in. It's like people from all over the world are kind of getting onto it. So that would be one of the things I would suggest you do. Have a quiet time, just spend 1 minute a day, but then try to get your time corralled onto this organizer. So pick up a copy of the organizer as you go out, download new pages. I actually have some others printed out if you don't have access to a printer. And just start living purposefully. The other piece I would say is keep a life-changing idea in front of you until that life, it gets in part of your life. Meditate on something, memorize something. I got great hints on how to memorize stuff in there, but we don't have time for them. Another, yeah, Jake?
How do you make sure you don't spend too much time playing?
Spend too much time playing.
Planning.
Oh. But you were talking about your mom there for a minute. Okay.
He's worried about me.
The plane or the planning part?
Plane.
All right. There's a thing called in business the paralysis of analysis. Yeah, people do spend time. So set the amount of time. For planning your life out, 10 hours, 5 hours, do it until you get it done because that's your life. Okay? It doesn't have to be perfect. Just put the time in to make it happen. Basically, with the image stuff I gave you, you went through the betters, picked one, you would probably do pretty well. Try it out for the year. Next year you can revise it. It takes you an hour. Okay? The idea behind purposeful task is you say, one of my things is I need to plan. So now I got the task. Is this an important thing? Yeah. Is it urgent? No. So it's in quadrant B. So you put it in quadrant, Roman numeral 2. It's a thing I want to begin this week. Now, where am I going to do it? Slot it in your schedule for a day. For this half hour, I'm going to plan. For this hour, I'm going to plan. Sunday, I'm going to plan. Sunday is kind of a dead day for a lot of people. So, put some of that time to planning. All right, then you basically, remember it's 80-20 on almost everything. So the first 20% of the time is going to give 80% of the benefit. So if planning was a 10-hour proposition, then 2 hours is going to give you the majority of the benefit you get from it. But planning can be done in actually less. But once you're first starting it, like doing a project planner might take half an hour. And then come back and look at it a week later. Multiple attempts at doing something actually help gives you, your brain cells recharge, you bring in more ideas, and then you look at it again and it comes. So what you don't want to do when you're planning is just like grind away, when it gets unproductive, it's over. Go on to the next task, it'll always be there to be picked up again later.
Yeah, I think it's just a perfectionist tendency. You want to make sure everything's planned out.
Yeah, it's once you do that, life is going to change, all right? Yeah, stop by the next couple weeks and I'll talk about perfectionism. But yeah, it's like you want to go for the best case scenario, and it's inefficient and unwise to spend too much time planning because the situation changes by the time you get there. So, based on these, this is what I think it's going to look like going forward. This is the best way I can approach it. All right, let's go. Being able to take action is one of those success traits in the beginning. So if you get those ingrained, okay, the Holy Spirit might tap you on the shoulder and say, okay, let's move on. Other one. Yeah?
A poor plan well implemented is preferable.
Yes.
To the perfect plan, it's not.
Right. Some great general said that. I can't remember which one.
Patton.
Yeah. Very good one. So, even a poor plan doing it, even a poor system doing it, just consistently doing it, unless you're doing the wrong thing. Eventually it comes to the point where, I need to do something differently. Good, great quote.
Remember you said something about evaluating monthly is ignored?
Yeah. So, evaluate monthly. You can accomplish stuff in a month that you wouldn't dream as possible. If you put it down there, you take some steps towards it, you keep it in front of you, and your robot will go, oh, we need to do that. And once you get your robot working for you, like, you can live on automatic pilot, and then your judge can go out and play while your robot does your work. Molly?
One of the best pieces of advice I ever got from my marketing teacher was, find the thing you don't want to do and do it first. If you don't spend your whole day going,
that is a good piece of advice in most scenarios. Some people need a little motivation, so pick a task to get you moving in the right direction, then do it. If there's an urgent task ahead of your thing you hate doing, not. But I would agree with that sentiment in that character is basically formed by doing what you don't want to do. Who knew? Yeah, that's what the essence of character is. There's an outline on it. But so, yeah, if once you get over that hurdle, everything else is easy. So I actually practice that every day. I get out of bed. Man, I hate doing that. And then from there on in, it's downhill. So, yeah.
Napoleon had a 30-day rule.
Oh, yes.
He would not touch anything on his desk for 30 days. And when he was done, confirm your 80-20 rule, he found about 80% of the things on his desk had taken care of themselves. He didn't have to fool them. And then he put himself to the task of taking care of the 20%.
You've seen my desk. Actually, I haven't seen it in a year. I don't have these minions to come and take the stuff off the desk. I don't even own a desk, folks. I just use a laptop. All right, well, thanks for coming. I hope I won't see you next year because you will have been such experts at this. Maybe I'll see you and you'll bring a friend to endure the same suffering. So have a good year and enjoy the rest of your day.